Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the feed for everyone to download and listen to. Today's review, though, is going to be a little bit more difficult for me because I realise that it's been quite a long time since I finished this book. I was away on a trip and I finished this book and then I was travelling and then I got home and what often happens if I've been to a juggling festival or a big event like that, I get a bit ill afterwards, and this time my voice was completely screwed up because I'd been shouting a lot and hosting events and doing shows without microphones, and that can really get to my voice. And so I've had a really bad voice over the past week, and I thought, well, I'll wait till my voice to get better. And to be honest, my voice is still not completely better, but it's probably going to be as good as it needs to be for me to do this podcast. So here we go. The podcast that I'm going to do is the review of Cameron Hurley, Hugo Award-winning Cameron Hurley, it says here on the front of the book, The Stars Are Legion. And this is a book, let me go over and do the quick summary from the Goodreads page. It says, Stars Are Legion, it's not part of the series, it's a standalone book. It's 400 pages, oh, that's the Kindle edition, 400 pages, I know, published February 7th, 2017. So, That's pretty much what you need to know about this. It is on the genres bit here. It says genres, science fiction, space opera, fiction, GLBT, fantasy, adult space, GLBT, queer, science fiction, fantasy, and also did not finish. That's also one of the shelves that it has been put into, or one of the genres that it's been put into, did not finish. To be honest, I was almost at that did not finish stage, but once I actually got through this book, I'm pretty glad that I did. The way this book works, let me just talk to you about my reading experience of this book. I often will read a book or listen to the audiobook. In this case, I listen to the audiobook, and there's different times when I'll listen to the audiobook. And if I'm doing stuff, I'll listen to audiobooks. If I've got podcasts to catch up on, I'll generally catch up on podcasts first. But if I'm doing a lot, but then sometimes, you know, when I'm not got a lot to do, the only time that I'll listen to an audiobook is when I go to bed, and I'll put it on with the idea being that I'll listen to, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes of the audiobook and then start falling asleep. However, this book, I don't know if it was just kind of like my place in life or whatever was going on, I fell asleep really, really quickly at the start of each time I started listening to this book. And normally that's not a bad thing. Like, if I'm halfway through a book and I fall asleep quite quickly, you know, just that 3 minutes of the book I'll listen to, I'll be like, oh, that's fine. And when I go back, I'll remember what happens. But when it's at the start of the book, it's really tricky because my brain doesn't have enough time to process what I've listened to or what I've heard, so it doesn't stay in my memory. And even though I'm only 3 minutes into the book, I can be like, I have no idea what those first 3 minutes are. If I'm 10 minutes in, it's like, I've got no idea what's going on. Where are we now in this book, even just 10 minutes in? And it's really tricky. So I can actually look back now at my reading experience. If I go to Clips and Bookmarks in the Audible app, it says here, on May 29th, so this is a long time ago I started this book, I set a bookmark at 18 seconds into chapter one, which is, in other words, they've just said, this is this book, read by this person, chapter one, blah, blah. And then I was like, okay, I'll set a bookmark there. So then if I fall asleep, I can go back to the time when I know when I last listened to it. And then it says here, the next bookmark that I set was May 29th, one evening later. And I set the bookmark at 20 seconds into chapter one. And then June 7th, I set the bookmark at 22 seconds into chapter one. And then June 9th, I set the bookmark at 41 seconds into chapter one. And it's only when I get to June 9th, later on in June 9th, I set the bookmark at 2 minutes and 50 seconds, and then later on, 18 minutes. So it took me from May 29th through to June the 9th to get into, so 11 days to get more than about 18 minutes into this book, which means that each time I sat down to listen to it, I was just listening to the first few minutes over and over again and then falling asleep. So it's weird to say this, but my entire reading experience of this was kind of like this whole book was kind of like wrapped up in me, like Groundhog Day style, listening to the first 3 minutes of this book and then falling asleep. And then next time I'm coming back to it and going, okay, I can remember these words and this thing here, but I can't really connect it to what's happening, so I'll listen to that again. And so I did, and I kept on listening to it over and over again. This didn't really help me get a smooth flowing into the book, because I always had this thing like, oh, this is a boring book which sends me to sleep all the time. But I did get over that. However, it then moved into a period of this book where I just wasn't enjoying it. I was remembering what was going on. The world building was interesting, but not really enough was happening. And it was all like, oh, political stuff here and a battle there. And the world, which I'll talk about in a minute, should have been strong enough to pull me through that really easy. But even then, I remember saying to Juliana, I was like, I'm just not getting into this book. It's really not. It's really slow. And about the first third of the book was really, really slow. And then something happened and someone was thrown down a hole and suddenly it became like an adventure. There was like an adventure story going on, and then the political side of it really started picking up when the two characters separated, and suddenly I was like, oh, actually I'm really enjoying it. And it kind of like the pace picks up, it becomes much more like, I say, action adventure-y and a lot more danger, and you kind of get to know the characters well enough to know what's going on, and you understand the world enough to kind of understand what's at stake. And it went through to the end of the book. Now, however, I did make a note here that when there's these two main characters in the story, there's Jade and there's Zan. And Zan has had her memory wiped or memory cleared out, so she is experiencing this. And it's an interesting way of experiencing a book, like, oh, we've got to do world building. Well, if the person who is experiencing the book, everything in the world is new to them, it seems weird that they'll be commenting on everything and they aren't going to be a very good guide to a new situation. So you often have to have someone from outside the world come to a world and then explore the world, and they're a stranger from a strange land, and they can explore, you know, our normal world or what the normal world is of the people and say, hey, why is it like this? What's going on here? I don't understand what's going on there either. This is like a space opera, and nobody comes from outside of this world. Everyone exists within this world, so it's somebody with a memory loss. And it just feels a bit convenient that that's the way it's going to work, and I don't actually think it adds that much to the story. Considering the other main character, Zane, is somebody who knows everything that's gone on and knows the entire backstory of Jade and Zan, and Jade isn't telling her. And I've complained about this in previous books, that if somebody in the book knows the full story, knows the full backstory of somebody else, and is just not telling them because plot reasons, or not just telling them, it kind of feels like a fake way of... It's like a fake tension, a fake way of telling a story. That, like, there's two characters. One doesn't remember or doesn't know, and the other person does know, but they're not just not going to tell us, the reader, or anything like that. So I kind of made a prediction at the end that the end of the story isn't going to be, like, action, forward action. It's just going to be the people in the book filling in what they didn't know, or Zan, the main character, kind of discovering what her backstory was. And thankfully it wasn't just that, but it still was, like, a good 60% of the end of the book was just Zan coming to remember who she was, or coming to be taught who she was, and, you know, this kind of thing. Or does she accept who she was because she's forgotten the memory, or does she not accept it and try to be a new person? And I kind of predicted that right near the very beginning of the book, and it, like I say, 60% of the end of the book was that, which again is not very satisfying, because you always know that in the backstory there is a really interesting backstory there. There is a full story there, but that backstory isn't really strong enough, or, you know, it's not a way of explaining the world building well enough that that could be a standalone story. And the action adventure politics story that actually happens in the book isn't a good enough story in its own right for it to be like, okay, let's just tell this story of someone falling down a hole and then just getting out of the hole again. That also isn't a strong enough story. So you get these 2 week stories, put them together, make one of the characters forget it and the other person not share the story. But again, 2 week of stories which aren't really narratively satisfying, shoving them together doesn't really make it more narratively satisfying. It's just more complexity in storytelling, but unfortunately not that much more reason, because I do think everything else in this book, like, the characters are good, the world building is good, all of this other stuff is good, like the technology and the you know, the bio kind of, you know, world building and all this biological world building and all that other kind of stuff is very good, but it's shackled to a story which I just didn't really... Again, the story grabbed me so little that a third of the way through the book, I was just going to stop. But I thought, tell you what, I'll just give it like another hour of the audiobook, and I'll see how it goes. And again, I am glad I did, but it could have been a lot better. What is it? Sort of like 12 hours of audiobook. So it's it's not a massive audiobook. It's not a really long time, but it is kind of quite a bit of commitment to a story that you're not really enjoying. The other problem, and this comes back to my, this is my reading experience. The problem that I had was that a lot of, this is a thing that I remember, I think Jenny from Reading Envy saying about the book, The Fifth Element. No, not The Fifth Element, Fifth Season. Fifth Element is a completely different story. The Fifth Season, where she said, oh, there's something mentioned about these obelisks at the start, and it was just mentioned right there in the first paragraph or in the first, you know, in the first few pages. And I read it and thought, oh, that's probably not going to be that important, and I'll just move on. And it kind of spoils it, so, because then if you do read the book after you've heard that, I didn't, but I noticed those obelisks straight away, and that, listening to her review of the book, or when she talked about the book, I was just like, well, no, that's obviously, those are obviously, like, the most important thing. You don't mention something in the opening chapter or the opening two pages of a book which isn't going to be important. The problem with my reading experience of this is that I listened to the first 3 minutes of this book so many times that, and it contains so much important stuff. Again, I almost don't want to read it out, but like the opening line is really good. It's sort of like, I remember throwing away a child. I don't know if it was my child, but I threw away a child. And you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And then there's another line when she's like, oh yes, I don't have any memory, but once I commanded a great army and then I went missing. And then she has this other thing, sort of like, something is strange with my left hand. It's clearly smaller than my right hand. And there's these scars on this part of my body. And as you're reading it through, like, of course, like, that was so clear, those just a few little facts from that opening page or opening 3 minutes of the audiobook was so clear in my mind that as I was going through, there was like these mysteries, like I say, her mind is wiped and other people are not doing this, and there's these other things sort of like, there's somebody who is a general, who this general from the past, and there's quotes from the general all the way through the book, like at the start of every chapter there's like a quote. It's sort of like, you know, like the Art of War quotes that everybody puts in, you know, sort of like, and then do this thing, and in battle do this, and I'm not in this, and sort of like going, and all the way time they're like, I think we're meant to be thinking, well, who's this general? But like, if you actually just remember, if you listen to the first 3 minutes of the audiobook over and over again, a lot of these, I wonder what this arm is for, and I wonder who this is, and I wonder what's going on there. Like, it's all given away in the first 3 minutes. I know it's just foreshadowing, but I do accept that nobody who writes a book expects someone to listen to the first 3 minutes of the audiobook or reads the first three pages of the book, like, you know, probably seven times before actually going on with the rest of the book. So that's, overall, as I say, that is my reading experience. That's the story of my reading experience of this book. Less of what's actually in the book, but my reading experience. So let's actually talk about what is the book about. I've gone in quite a lot of it. It says, you know, on those genres, on Goodreads, what did it say? Science fiction, space opera, fantasy, adult, science fiction, fantasy. And I don't think it's a fantasy book at all. There are some kind of fantastical elements in it, but it does seem to be based possible whateverness. I don't know. This is space opera, all based around biological stuff. Right at the start of the book, it says that she said the word world. The only person in the world who does this. But then the word for world or planet or whatever it is and spaceship is the same word, or they're so similar that I couldn't remember or couldn't tell which one it is. So this whole book is set on these different, mostly three different worlds, three or four, but there's lots more worlds. In fact, there's a whole legion of worlds. The Stars of Legion is the title of the book, but the Legion is a big group of worlds. But all of these worlds are like big biological beings, Leviathan kind of massive big airships, which are floating around these big sort of, I say airships, but they're not in air, they're out in space, and they're floating around, and there's a star in the middle of these ones, and the star is like an artificial star. So it's a completely separate world from what we imagine any world to be, that in the entire worlds are built out of biological material. And they have to get material from somewhere. So as these worlds are dying, they are, you know, the different people from the different worlds are going over to other worlds and grabbing biological matter and raiding them for other things. And then you can bring it back and recycle stuff in your own world. And it's a pretty crazy setup that everything is biological. The spacesuits that they wear are biological. The spaceships, these little personal spaceships that they fly between the ships, are biological. They says, well, I got onto my spaceship and flew, and the spaceship wasn't feeling very well, and it didn't want to go where in it. So I was like, oh, they're actually creatures as well that can somehow move through the vacuum. And yeah, pretty much the whole world is set up in this way, and metal is very rare, and it's all biological. And I really enjoyed this. Unfortunately, it took a long time to really get into what's going on here. The world building, as I said, for the first third of the book, is mostly like on the surface in between the worlds, and you never really get an idea of how it all works until like halfway through the book, when one of them gets thrown down a chute and is tried to be recycled, and when you go down the recycling chute, it turns out there's a whole world underneath in the bowels of the world, in the guts of the world, there's a whole other sections. And as one of the characters is going through that world, it really gets, all the world building happens, sort of like the technological, biological, you know, the life system, the life cycles, you know, what all these women are doing down there. And that's a massive part of the book, which I don't want to go into, but I really enjoyed all of that. But again, it's weird that the real core world building happens like in the second half of the book, not kind of where I wanted it to be for my own reading enjoyment. But it is in there, and I did enjoy it once I got into it. What's my other notes here? Yeah, so there's two, like I said, there's two main characters, Jade, who is some... is attached. To be honest, I don't really need to go too much into the story. There's Jade and Zan, and Zan's lost her memory, and she goes on a journey to find herself, and Jade hasn't lost her memory, but she's kind of, she the double crosser, is she someone you can trust, because she's very secretive, and she knows this plan, and she's got a plan to save the world, or to save the Legion, or to save the universe, and at the end, like I say, convenient stuff happens, and it all comes together, and it seems like, is the world going to be saved, or is the world going to be lost? I don't think there needs to be a follow-up book to this. It is, like I say, a book that is kind of mostly about the world building. It even says here on the Goodreads page, it said, in the tradition of The Fall of Hyperion and Dune, The Stars Are Legion is an epic and thrilling tale about tragic love, revenge, and a war as imagined by one of the genre's most celebrated new writers. And I think the idea here is that Dune is a book about politics in a world which is very different from our own, and it kind of depends on a very different world of our own to get those politics to play out and the story to play out in the way that you want. And that's what they're kind of going for in this book. It's a very different, very interesting world, and it's a unique story that could only be told on this world. The other genre labels that this has got marked down here on Goodreads is GLBT, and queer and adult. It is a very adult book. This is pretty graphic in some ways. There is a lot of like body horror and gooiness and ickiness and all that kind of stuff, and quite a bit of sex, because this is a book where there are only female... I'm not saying it's got a lot of sex because there's only female characters, but the in a way, it's only female. But of course, these characters, they're not really human. I mean, if there's only female, the distinction between male and female kind of falls out. But it is very much that all of these are female. They're all mothers. They all can be mothers. They're all being impregnated all the time, kind of by the spaceships. So I guess the spaceships themselves, the planets themselves, are kind of male, and they impregnate the women, and the women have babies to repopulate the world, but not just with other humans and other women, but also with other creatures and things that, or everything that's in there. So the human, kind of human women are the wombs for the entire world, for everything that needs to be created biologically. The women are kind of wombs. And it's, again, it's not explained how the world's got to this way. Is there a line between humans in our world and humans in that world? I'm not sure. Maybe there's a disconnect. It's never really explained where these worlds come from, or where they are going, or what they are doing there. But it's a very interesting setup. And yes, I guess that's why it's a queer book, because kind of by default, if there's any love or sex or weirdness or all that other kind of stuff that goes in, it is very queer, it is very gay, lesbian, whatever labels that you want to put onto this. And it is kind of refreshing, once again, to read a book. And I think this is a trend, of course, in more modern fantasy and science fiction, that it's kind of playing with gender. Well, I wouldn't say it's a trend. I just think it's kind of more accepted now. And this is the kind of book that will be nominated for a Hugo and Nebula Award, in part because it's a very interesting book and it's a very new kind of story. But I think it does fit in with the trend of, like, for example, I think the Hugo and Nebula Award books this year, I don't think there was a single straight white male American nominated in any of the novel categories. It was all women and non-white men and transsexuals and gay people or whatever, like all those different kind of things, which I think is a very interesting way. And I think this is an interesting way of taking this same kind of this kind of fiction, and I think it fits in well with the current trends. And in a way, I know it's weird to say this, it's kind of that it fits in so well that I almost didn't notice it until halfway through the book. I was like, oh, there aren't any men. And it, like I say, it's become part of my modern science fiction reading and fantasy reading, that's the kind of thing that it is. The books are by women about worlds where men are not there or different or interchangeable with women, or characters are interchangeable, male and female, or the characters don't recognize who, like, they don't recognize, pronouns, gendered pronouns, and they don't reckon, don't use gendered pronouns and all that kind of stuff. And this fits in with that. And I must admit, I do enjoy it because it is a new exploration of that. I don't need to get in too much about it, too much depth about it. I just say I did enjoy that aspect of it. What else do I have here in my notes? Recycling humans, that's quite interesting. Lost a memory, has to work out she is, yeah. Also, because when I got to the end of this book, when I got to the end, I was like, okay, that's good. And then I thought, well, I just need to fall asleep and I don't have another audiobook to listen to. So I went back and listened to the first part of it again. And then over, the course of a morning, I listened to the first 2-3 hours of the audiobook again, just to work out why I wasn't enjoying, or if I thought the first half of the book was slow or not. And it turns out when I was listening to it the second time, it kind of rushed by. Maybe it's because I already heard all of that and knew what was going on. I didn't need to pay quite as much attention to it. But on my second listen through to the first few hours of the audiobook, it did go by a lot quicker. Again, might just be because I knew what was going on and I didn't have to concentrate so hard, and I wasn't always going, oh, what's going on? I've got to think about what's going on. That was it. So I do have one more comment. This book is narrated by, let me bring up the Audible page here, written by Cameron Hurley, narrated by Nicole Poole and Terry Schnaubelt. Because Nicole takes one of the main characters and Terry takes the other main characters. To be honest, I could never really tell their voices apart. They do have slightly different voices, but not really different enough for me to, like, be able to just, if I, like, turn it on and hear the voice, know which one of the main characters I was listening to just from the main voice. So I was wondering, I wasn't really quite sure why they got two audiobook narrators in to do this. It didn't really add very much to it. But again, they're both pretty good narrators and I enjoyed it. If you want to check out this audiobook, I suggest you go to Audible and do it. And you can do that by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and you can get this book for free. Or if not this book, any other book that you want for free. There's got like 180,000 audiobooks that you can select. And by going there, you can actually help out the SFBRP and get a free audiobook by it for yourself, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Right then, I think that wraps up my review. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about this. I did enjoy it, but it was very slow at the start, and overall, the story wasn't really strong enough. Oh yeah, actually, I do remember why I wanted to, what else I wanted to talk about here. So, recommended this book to, someone recommended this book to me, and it was from, where is it? It's in the community groups. I should have opened this up here. So SFBRP listeners, someone in the thread, books I would like to see reviewed, which I'm going to open now, and go to the final page. The reason I read this book is because Lindsay said, I just finished The Stars. This is back in May. He said, I just finished The Stars Are Legion by Cameron Hurley. Luke, I think it's something you'll probably like. It's a big idea fiction that takes you on a detailed tour of a fascinating world building because one of the main characters is amnesiac. I did it in print, so I can't vouch for the audio. Audio is fine, by the way. I think it's much more successful version of Updraft, biotech-inspired world of unexplained origins with humans creating societies around survival there, only without the YA stuff, the young adult stuff, and with believable world building. And so that's the reason why I read this. And I do think this actually is a good companion piece to Updraft, which again, like I say, biotech-inspired world, unexplained origins, humans creating societies around survival. And in that one, I thought the story was way too obvious, and it was young adult stuff, and overthrowing a government, and blah, 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 like that kind of stuff. And I do think this is a much better take on a similar thing. In that one, I never really felt felt like the world building was properly established of what's going on and why is going on, and all the action took place and these towers and stuff, and it was never really explained, like, what do people eat, where does stuff come from, what's going on here, like that. And it's much more about the young adult blah blah love triangle story stuff, and you're like, okay, whatever. And this story, like I say, it's like an adult version of that. Adult in many ways, the complexity, but also just the world building is just so much clearer. Like, all the time in this I was like, oh, okay, this is really, like, if this was a world, it's going to be really hard to live in and really hard to get through, and it's going to be really disgusting. And then when you actually get into the bowels of the world, you're like, oh, it really is disgusting down here. And all of that kind of interesting stuff seemed to be missing from Updraft, because, again, they wanted to have, you know, a strong young female girl called Katniss, pretty much called Katniss, you know, overthrowing a government. And that's missing in this one. Okay, so I think, thanks Lindsay for suggesting that. I think that's all I was wanting to talk about here. I've got through to the end of my notes. I'm going to rate this book 3 stars because I do think it's worth reading, but overall there was too much of it which wasn't enjoyable. So it's a above average 3-star book. World building, really, really good. Story, not quite so good, and a bit slow to get into, especially in that first half. Right, that's it for me. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every single email that I get. You can also recommend books to me via email. But also, the best thing to do is go over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and throw a book suggestion into the books I would like to see reviewed thread. And especially if other people say, hey, I agree, you should read this book, it's much more likely that I will get it. And nobody's actually posted in there since May, and now it's July. Where are all the books? Where are all the book recommendations, guys? This is like the main way that I get book recommendations, is people on Goodreads and things like that. So, talking of Goodreads, let's check out. You can become my friend there, but you can also check out. I also check out what friends of mine like about books that I have read or listened to. For example, Stars Elysian. This is on average 3.77 stars by everyone and 3.9 stars by friend reviews. In other words, listeners to this podcast. Lindsay rated it 4 stars. Jay rated it 5 stars. SF Fangirl rated it 2 stars. Lots of other 4-star reviews here as well. So, I always enjoy seeing what other people think of books that I'm reading. And Goodreads is, of course, the easiest and best way that I can connect with the listeners of this podcast. Right, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Luke Burridge and all those places. Also, YouTube. The next episode is probably going to be me and Juliana talking about the Raven Stratagem, which is the follow-up to... what is it called? Nine Fox Gambit by Yoon Ha Lee. Well, Juliana is reading that as I speak. She's over there ill with a bad throat on the couch. So once we're both not ill anymore, we'll get to that review. I think that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.